Hello, my name is Chris Bett and welcome to Bet on Rangers on the Fourth Official. On this episode, we'll be looking back on Rangers' 3-0 defeat last night against Napoli, and we'll be looking forward to Rangers playing Dundee United at Ibrox this Saturday. Joining me for this episode, first of all, is Scott. Scott, how you doing?
I'm about mixed emotions, but all good.
I feel as if it's my right-hand man now, my right-hand man in misery, Dave.
I'm good, mate, thanks. I don't know if I'm looking forward to Dundee United, but I'm certainly going to be there.
And finally, Tom. Tom, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, thank you, mate. Very well.
Yeah. Right, so obviously last night we're 24 hours removed from Rangers' 3-0 defeat against Napoli. There's a lot of talking points about the game itself, about the team selection, about any kind of subliminal messages that Gio may not have been sending to the board, some individual performances we can talk about, some decisions that Gio made on the actual night we will also touch upon. Before I get into just even the starting lineup, I think we can all agree that the bare minimum we needed was
a half decent ref.
Well, I think the bare minimum we needed apart from that would have been application, desire, effort, and a reminder of what some players can actually do, because obviously they've not really turned up the last couple of weeks. I'll just go around you all first. Do you feel, despite it being a 3-0 defeat, Tom, I'll come at you first, do you feel that we ticked all the boxes?
Yes, I think they showed more fight in the first 20 minutes than they have in the last two games.
Yeah, that's fair. Dave?
In terms of performance, like we said tonight, we needed one, and I think first 55 minutes we got one against a very, very good standard opposition.
And Scott?
I'll echo the comments of both of the guys there. I think when the lineup was announced, we knew that it was an 11 that we were going to roll up their sleeves and put a shift in.
Well, let's talk about that, the 11 that started. So you can look at this a few ways. You can look at it as a 3-5-2, you can look at it as a 5-4-1. It was certainly an interesting setup. We started with McGregor in goals due to John McLaughlin's injury. Tavernier, which he was either going to be right back or right wing back. Barisic, left wing back or left back. And then three centre halves in Lundstrom, Sands, and Goldson. In midfield, we had Arfield, Davis, Jack. Kent was playing just off the front man, and Alfredo Morelos. So we look at this from the point of view that Stephen Davis and Alan McGregor started. Now, the last time Rangers were in the Champions League, which was 12 years ago, the last game we played at Ibrox in the Champions League was against Manchester United. They beat us with a late Wayne Rooney penalty. McGregor and Davis actually started that night also. So that tells its own story. And we can also look at the fact that our summer signings, seven of them, two of which are injured, John Souter and Tom Lawrence, but the other five were actually on the bench, and Ben Davis, Ridvan Yilmaz, Antonio Colak, Malik Tillman and Rabi Matondo. So the first question I'll ask is, Scott, I'll come to you first. Were you surprised by the setup? And secondly, no new signings at all? Gio never made a big thing about it. He said that he doesn't look at the fact that a new signing has to play. He just looks at it as the Rangers players now, and it doesn't matter the length of service or whatever. He picked the team that he thought was best. But for me, Scott, I don't know if you agree, was this a clear message? Now, we'll come on to another message I think Gio sent, but for you, was this a clear message to Ross Wilson and possibly even the board in terms of, and this is pure speculation, this is just my interpretation, so that's why I'm going to ask you guys what you interpreted from this, but was the message probably, you've no help me here at all, the guys you brought in aren't good enough, and this is where we're at purely because you haven't backed me?
I think you need to look at it for two ways. It's know that he's not been backed in the sense that we've spent a bit. Obviously, we've spent near enough $5 million in bringing in Yilmaz, and then $4 million odd bringing in Davis, $2 million odd in Matondo, $2 million odd in Colak. I'm not saying that they're no backing. Maybe not to the extent that people want them to back. And again, considering the players that we lost, to be absorbed with this model that we want, that we want to rebuild, we want to invest, we want to improve and continue to buy players of a, once you sell players at a good price, you buy players of a better caliber than you were buying, and then sell them for an even bigger price, and so on and so forth, to create that sort of model. For me, the lineup was just a case of, see, to be honest with you, the last two, three performances. Even the Queen of the South victory in the Scottish Cup, or sorry, the League Cup. I think he's just sitting going like, you know, I've tried every cunt and nobody's given me anything, so fuck it, I'm putting this team up. I'm putting in guys that actually put a shift. I don't care what their value is, their price tag is. And all I can say is I'm probably the most thankful man on the planet that not to be sad towards a player, but very pleased to hear that John McLaughlin maybe has a wee niggle. I hope it's not too serious, but does keep him sidelined for a wee while.
Dave, you described it as a team lineup of Scott just alluded to there, players that we knew were going to roll up the sleeves and get stuck in. That's because we know every single player that started last night, all 11 guys, we knew what they were going to give us, because obviously they're in for a time they've been at Rangers and we pretty much know them inside out now. That tells its own story, the fact that we kind of rely upon the five guys on the bench who were new signings to put in just the bare minimum of putting in a shift.
Absolutely. You said there, is Van Bronckhorst sending a subliminal message, and what does it say about when he mentioned, I've got two eyes and I can see in training who's performing. The fact that that doesn't include the players the board have presented them with, or Ross Wilson's presented them with, is absolutely damning. It's probably up there with one of the most overt statements I've heard a Rangers manager make in terms of criticism of what's going on round about him. He's done it in a very kind of tactful way, but for me, the fact that nine of the players who started last night were on the pitch, well, eight of them were on the pitch for the Rangers and Aussie game, albeit Bonner was in a different strip, and Davis was in the stand.
Sorry, Dave, that was Bonner's best performance at Ibrox.
Well, you could die, okay. Leaving that aside, I looked like a right hard man that night, but anyway. Leaving that aside, that's 4 years and title wins and successive Europa League campaigns, which is we always thought was going to be attractive to players and gives the money to bring them in. We've not done anything to the squad in that period of time that's improved any. And as you know, I'm due out with the discussion the other night, or I generally am due out. And now I'm thinking about it, I'm going, actually, wait a minute. Regardless of Gio's merits, the fact that squad hasn't been improved in any significant way in that period of time is absolutely damning on the board. And to be honest, I just don't know where we go for here in terms of personnel, recruitment. Do we have the money to bring players in? Scott says he's been backed, but as I said the other night, I don't think the board are necessarily backing him in terms of recruitment by going out and seeking out players and fitting them into a system or a model and doing their diligence. And you made that point the other night. I think we're just scraping the bargain bin. The more I think about it, these players have just been offered to us, or they've been free and made available in some sort of transfer list somewhere, and the board have brought them in because they're easy. But there's no strategy there. And I think last night was the absolute perfect example of that, where Gio's just gone back to his old stages.
I mean, Tom, if you were going to tell me after the Europa League final that...
If you're going to tell me after Rosie, you'll still be watching these guys all in that wee ball day left back, you'll be playing Fiano. I'd have found it incredible to think.
Yeah, I will, if you put it like that. But not going as far back as Aussie, but obviously Dave does make a very, very valid point. But Tom, if you're going to tell me after Europa League final, after we've been beating the Europa League final, that we will still manage to get to the Champions League, we'll sell Bassi for a record fee, we'll sell Aribo for $6 to $10 million, we'll sell our season tickets again, we'll charge the highest amount possible for our Champions League package. If you were going to tell me all of that, and then in the next breath you then tell me that our first Champions League game at Ibrox will be 11 players that are currently already at the club, I would say you're absolutely mental and you need help. But yeah, that was the case.
It'd be absolute disbelief.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, as you said, you think you're absolutely mental. Yeah, there's no other words by looking at just what's going on.
Yeah, and there is no clear answer as to what is going on, but there's clear speculation as to what's going on from the fans' perspective, and I think now it's clear where the issues lie with our football club. As Dave said, he is predominantly on the kind of defense, not on the fence, sorry, he isn't on the fence anymore. He is predominantly in the camp of Gio out. But as I've always said to Dave, that's all very well and fair. But the next managers get the same issues to work with. He's got the same players to work with. And, you know, who's to say that the next manager will have the same performance as Gio in terms of, now I know Gio's domestic record isn't great, but he's performed miracle after miracle in Europe, and I think this sort of brings it home last night's team lineup. Is that no fair to you, Dave?
Oh, I absolutely, as I say, the more I see this, thinking about this, so I'm not contradicting myself too much, but the more I see this summer's window for being the shambles it is, and none of these guys made an impact. No, right, Lawrence is carrying an injury, but again, he falls into the bracket I mentioned in terms of targeting and identifying players. The more Mutondo sits out, the more Tillman sits out, the more Davies inexplicably kind of get near the team for whatever reason, even though he's on the bench. Yilmaz just nowhere to be seen. The worse the picture becomes for that summer, the more lenient I become towards Gio and the more militant I get towards the board.
Scott, it's not just the summer window though, is it? Because when you actually look at the two windows that Gio's had, the January window, we signed four players, three are no longer with us, and people go, ah, but the two of them are loans. I don't think that really matters, because if Ramsey or Diallo really hit the heights, there was every chance we were going to try and go back in for them. And then considering that Aaron Ramsey actually left in a free transfer, if his loan worked out for Rangers, there's no doubt about it, Rangers would have tried to sign him. So I think, is it fair to say that two windows Gio's had and two windows the board, especially the sporting director, has made an absolute arse of it, when you consider that Gio's not fancied any of the players he's brought in apart from Sands and Colak and maybe Lawrence?
I was trying my best not to do my best Om Puri impression there by going, don't mention the bastard's name to me, he did. When you say that in Ramsey. never mention that name again. No, I totally agree with you there. Coming back, like I said, I'll maybe elaborate a wee bit on the point that Dave picked me up on there, leading into your question. I can understand him saying that he's not been back to the extent and stuff like that, and I do agree with the bargain bin. I think we're maybe being given a bit. I think it's a double-sided coin. I don't want to say that he's not been backed in the sense that financially we've went out and, listen, I'm not saying that we've spent what the other side of Glasgow are spending or whatever, I said, but we've spent a bit, but have we spent it in the right areas? And more importantly, that's two windows in a row. How much you say is Gio getting in these transfers? And as I know we're going to move on to the whole Ben Davies thing, what is Ross Wilson using to pick up these players? Because, I mean, these windows are becoming reminiscent of Lionel Letizia and Jose Carlo Pierre Fanfan for me. Does
it go to Dave's point that they're available, so we'll just take them?
I think to an extent it does, maybe with the exception of Lawrence. Lawrence was pretty, albeit Derby County were in a bad way and he was going from there. Obviously, Sheffield United were in for him and a number of other clubs in the Championship were wanting. So, level-wise, it's six and half a dozen. I think again, a lot of players would prefer to play in the Championship than to play in Scotland. But when they get the chance to play in Scotland, where Rangers or a Celtic can compete in Europe, then that puts the Championship wages at the sort of blower. So I reckon with him and perhaps Yilmaz as well, because Yilmaz, the Besiktas fans didn't want him to go. The rest of them, I mean, like I said, Rabbi Mutondo, we got a bit excited about him because he showed a bit of turn of pace in the early days. Since then, he's no kicked a ball. And for me, Rabbi Mutondo was nowhere to be seen in a Schalke team, which he featured in the team that got relegated and embarrassed beyond any belief. And then he never featured in the Schalke team that won its way back up. So I'm failing to see where the scouting of him came in. I had seen him once or twice in a Schalke jersey and he looked okay. But again, I, when you look at Mutondo, fair enough. Colak, I can't say I'd seen anything of him other than the fact that he scored two goals against us for Malmo. That said, I think we're being maybe a bit harsh in saying that Lawrence is maybe the only signing that's. I think Colak has done his best with what he's received, and I genuinely think the big issue just now is the actual team, the gelling of the team and the tactics. Last night, we were outclassed for 90 minutes, but we weren't outfought. And that's the major difference. We know that we're going to have to punch above our weight in certain games, and the team did that up until obviously the tipping point where the man advantage just killed it.
Yeah, I mean, it says a lot that, you know, well, 20 odd minutes in, or just under 20 minutes in, we're going to talk about Napoli, and we've just spent it talking about the actual team lineup and the problems we have there, because these problems are going to keep arising up until the World Cup. Well, obviously after the World Cup, I hope that there is some sort of change in January, but we also know that there won't be radical changes in January, because that would just be silly, to be honest with you. However, there is a point that if radical changes are needed in January, then that's because the board are trying to correct their own failings from the summer. It's just an absolute a crazy situation to have found ourselves in. But anyway, the game, before the game, we had obviously the minute silence, we had the national anthem. I thought that was listen, I'm no a royalist by any stretch of imagination. I'm not anti-royalist either. I'm pretty, like, I don't really care either way, but obviously I appreciate the significance of Queen Elizabeth's reign, and I appreciate the significance of our death. And I thought that, to be honest with you, as someone who isn't a royalist, I thought that was something really special to be part of. What do you guys feel? I know, Tom, I'll ask you first, because obviously you weren't there. From watching it on the TV, how did it come across in the TV? Because in the stadium, obviously, Scott and Dave, they'll have their view in a minute about that.
It was absolutely fantastic. It was out of this world. You know, it's, I would say it's up there one of our best TIFOs we've done.
Yeah,
it was brilliant.
And obviously, without going too personal, Tom, I'll not reveal anything about you, but obviously it's a subject close to you. It must have made you feel quite proud.
Oh, massively, yeah. Massively proud. Proud, yeah. Proud of the team. Proud that, you know, my team can do that for the Queen, for the late Queen.
Dave, what about you? I know you're the same as me in terms of you either way, you don't care, you're not a royalist or anything like that, but did you feel quite proud of the club last night during that couple of minutes where we'd done the silence and then the national anthem?
Absolutely. Sometimes I can be quite apt about it and quite sort of try to cast it in a humorous light, but believe it or not, in all seriousness, the traditions of the club and the traditions of the United Kingdom are important to me in a lot of respects. And if we're going to say, what sometimes annoys me is the fact that fans behave in a certain way that is very superficial in terms of trying to represent these traditions. They'll say things and sing songs that they don't really feel. And I thought last night you could see there was a real depth of feeling there amongst the whole crowd. The Union Bears done a great job with the TIFO, and everybody who backed it financially deserves credit. And it sets us apart. We want to be set apart from other clubs in Britain as an example of not just a football, but a kind of social institution, and to be seen as something more and something bigger. And I think we did that. Things like the Living Cup, the bike, the trophy room's not in the same category, but the picture of the Queen in the dressing room. If you want to be seen as the quintessential British club or one of them, I thought it was a great way to do that. And the amount of positive press, Tom, you'll have seen it down south more than we will up here. I think the amount of positive press has been fantastic for us over it.
Yeah, and Scott, obviously, Dave just mentioned there has been one of the quintessential British clubs. I think last night consolidated the fact that we are the quintessential British club in the UK. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, without a doubt. Just again, echoing both Dave and Tom's sentiments. I'm probably more along the sides of Tom, having, I know, like myself, we both attested and swore our oath of allegiance to Her Majesty. So an absolutely fantastic touch for our club. And I was proud to see what they've done. So all credit must go to the Union Bears for that, and credit to the club for making the decision that they were going to tell UEFA to get stuffed. That's basically it. Just it was a very clever move from the club, because we knew we wanted to do it. We knew that, again, fitting with the traditions of our club, it was something that was right to do. But at the same time, if we were to receive any backlash for that, the publicity itself and the PR that we would gain from it, I'm not thinking it, and I'm not trying to be morally bankrupt on this one. I'm trying to say from a business point of view, taking a small fine to show that we are the British, quintessential British club would have been worthwhile every time.
Yeah, and just on that, obviously UEFA today have come out and said that the Rangers will receive no fine, and obviously the alarm mob will, but I don't think there's any point commenting on that. See, to be honest with you, this is going to sound like a really weird point, but it just shows you how stupid and inconsistent UEFA are. Look, I think that Celtic obviously deserve their fine for that banner, but the fact that UEFA told us, oh, don't do it, and then we were always going to do it anyway, and then there was no consequences yet, which is good. I'm glad, by the way, common sense prevailed, but why tell us not to do it in the first place? It's just, and also what I found out last night as well, I'm kind of going on a wee rant here about UEFA. Yeah, the UEFA protocol is that the players still need to wear masks, and like, I just don't understand it, man. Who do they think they are? Like, do they think they're above the World Health Organization? Do they think they're above the governments of the countries that represent that are represented in the Champions League? The rules, the laws, the stupid wee kind of things that you need to follow, like kickoffs, if they're delayed by 30 seconds, you get a fine, or this kind of nonsense. I remember UEFA being really kind of arsey back in the day when we actually played in the Champions League, you know, 12 years ago, as I alluded to, but they're just getting worse and worse. They really are seeming to be like a closed state and you have to go by their rules. I just do not understand their approach to that. Dave, you're wanting to come in, aren't you? You're chomping a bit here.
I've got a belter, a link for you.
Go on.
Right. Speaking of UEFA and people in masks, let's talk about the fucking referee.
We'll come on to that. Let's finally get right in here, right? So the national anthem played, the kickoff happened, and then within 90 seconds Morelos has got a chance, probably should have done better, but it's a glancing header, it goes wide. Listen, this might sound harsh, but Scott, in that 90 seconds we've seen more in that 90 seconds, and we did over 180 minutes from Ajax and Celtic, didn't we?
Without a doubt, yeah. Don't know whether it was the atmosphere, don't know whether they've had a swift kick up the arse, but don't know whether it was the personnel on the field, but there was an energy about the team that we've not seen in a good 3 weeks. So, yep, an excellent start. Unfortunately, I never buried it, but hey-ho, can't be too critical.
I thought Morelos was fantastic. We're going to individuals soon. I'm not going to have a pure deep dive analysis into this in terms of chance, critiquing chance after chance for both teams. I just want to talk about the overall performance levels and energy levels. I thought Rangers pressing for the first half an hour at least was fantastic. The first half in particular, I thought Rangers were really impressive. As were Napoli. You could see Napoli were class or two, or maybe even more, above us, but they couldn't really handle the constant hustling and harrying from Rangers players. The atmosphere itself, I think that got to them in the first 20 minutes or so. We go in 0-0, and it's a fantastic European performance thus far, and we're right in the game. I remember a few of you were saying, obviously, before the game, we just weren't up for it, and obviously on back-to-back 4-0 defeats, but the performance level from the players, I believe it ignited something within the fans, because the fans all of a sudden are highly charged, they're emotional, we're right into it, and we're shouting the players on, and there was no what I was expecting, you know. I wouldn't say abuse, I think that's too much of a loaded term, and it's probably the wrong description to use, but I certainly felt there would be a lot more grumbling from the fans, a lot more of the fans on the back of players if things weren't going our way. But even when Napoli had the ball, Tom, and Napoli were enjoying spells of possession, and maybe you could actually say dominance in the first half, the fans were still on side with the players, and the players were helping the fans, and the fans were helping the players, and everybody was united. I wasn't expecting that, Tom, I will be honest with you, purely because of the last two performances. So that was good to see, and I think that has to be credit to the players who were on the pitch, because you could clearly see they were giving it their all.
Totally agree. You know, it's one of them. If you see your 11 players on the pitch giving their all, you are going to, you know, you're going to support them, and vice versa. And yeah, as you said, they get a lift from that, we get a lift from them, and it just keeps going. But yeah,
Just before half time, Morelos had a chance as well. Obviously, I think a fully fit and firing Alfredo Morelos at least, you know, gets that chance on target. But he kind of had a swipe at it. But anyway, the whistle goes. It's 0-0. Ibrox is still pretty rocking at this point. I think we're all expecting something special to happen on the night. I certainly was. Second half starts, first 15 minutes, it's still a game. I think both teams are competing well. Rangers don't look out of out of their depth at all. It's there's two teams going kind of toe-to-toe here. It probably would have taken a wee bit of quality for one of the two teams to score, and that quality probably would have came from Napoli. However, Scott, it was actually, I don't know if you call it a mistake, right, but it took a penalty and a sending off. Now, I'll come to you first, Scott, obviously, about this. So the ball comes through. I think Arfield lost the ball in midfield and the ball gets played through our defence. Lundstrom and Sands are too far apart. That's why, obviously, the ball manages to get through. Sands ends up behind the player. Lundstrom's sort of behind him. It's Simeone, it was. Before Simeone gets a shot away, Sands has dived in. And the players fell over, and it's a penalty to Napoli, and the referee gives a second yellow card for James Sands and sends him off. Now, at this stage, I still don't want to talk about ref. We'll literally devote one section to the referee because there was that many talking points about it. But at the time, I thought, right, if this goes to VAR, it should go to VAR anyway because it has a penalty. I was like, if the penalty stands, it must be a penalty. And it was, and I was like, fair enough, because you have to trust the process. I'll come on to my take on what I actually seen at home when I seen the replay again, but we'll just obviously go with the live action. Penalty gets taken, McGregor saves it, and then I think the guy who actually took the penalty scored the rebound. I think it was, or it might have been the guy encroaching, I can't remember, right? But
it was Politano, the guy encroaching, scored the rebound.
Right, okay, so Napoli think they've scored, and then there's this 2-3-4 minute delay where, for me, again, we'll come on to this when we're discussing the referee's performances, the referee didn't have a fucking clue what to do. And you could see that he was trying to take as much advice as he could from his earpiece. And eventually we come to a retake. Now, Ibrox is raging at this point. We believe that it shouldn't be a retake, but in actual fact, it was the correct decision. The problem was created because the referee took so long to come to that decision. The retake was taken, Scott, and Alan McGregor saves it again. It was a whirlwind 5-6 minutes, two penalty saves from Alan McGregor. So first of all, Scott, was it a penalty for you?
Yes, penalty. I don't think there was any malice in it. I think it was a bit unfair to say he dived in. I think he tried to put his foot out to get in front of the ball. The last wee touch took it through his legs, so arguably the ball did make contact with the ball. However, his foot, no matter how slight it was, played the man. And to quote Chris Boyd, hard-boiled egg and a soft-boiled egg still an egg, so it was a penalty. I think the issue for me, again, is the concentration, the lack of discipline that we have defensively, and whether that's down to not having two natural centre-halves playing together, or whatever. You see Lundstrom trying to close. Normally that space is the space between Sands and Barisic, but this time it was played between the sort of Goldson sitting slightly further out and Lundstrom trying to fill that sort of central centre back position, if you will. And that was where we get caught. So again, I think it's down to our poor defence allowing the run. And these things happen. There was no malice in it. It wasn't. He was just trying to get a foot in front of the ball, and unfortunately the touch killed it for him. Having already been booked, the ref's not really got an option but to send him off, so fair enough, penalty.
Dave, obviously you were at the game as well. Did you have a clue what the fuck was going on?
No, not for the retake. I was too busy celebrating the save, and then he let it play, and I thought, has this been VAR'd and the whole thing's just been ruled out? Because if it were, I was sitting in the main stand, pretty much in line with the tackle. I thought Sands got something on the ball. I haven't watched the replay a number of times, and I'm watching it at the minute, kind of on loop, just to refresh my memory. Probably on balance, it's one of the ones. Sometimes the ref waves, in Scotland, the ref waves that away 50% of the time. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. Them's the breaks. But if further up the park, Arfield tries to turn. I was thinking Goldson is Mark Simeone at the game. Goldson's really done well with him. And then Goldson, I think, is pops the ball to Arfield, who tries to play a quick pass. The guy cuts it out and in one motion puts Simeone through and goal. So that's the margins you're operating at. All of a sudden, from us having the ball in reasonably comfortable possession, they're 1-1 with the keeper and forcing a penalty. So, unfortunate in a lot of respects, bit of quality on their part. As I say, sometimes in Scotland you get it, sometimes you don't. It's just, it was a tough one to take because overall the referee was poor. So at that point, you're seriously doubting him. In fact, it's a header for Goldson and Arfield feels to kind of connect to it properly. So at that point, you're well in the game. 10 men kills it. And you know it's going to be an absolute uphill battle, albeit McGregor done his bit, but it's an uphill battle for there. So, aye.
Tom, I was going to say, you know, two penalty saves in quick
succession.
I'm not going to say it. I will admit that after they saved the second penalty, they did say to me, where was this?
Don't.
But I was like, come on. But, Tom, another iconic moment in the career of Alan McGregor, despite the result, but, you know, you don't see many times where a keeper saves a penalty then a retake, and, you know, it just shows you that the guy still has some of his powers.
Yes, he's a short stopper. It's been a strength of his for as long as he's been a goalkeeper. You know, going back way back when to when he's playing for us, 2010, I think he made his debut. It's what he's always been good at, and unfortunately still can't come for a cross. But again, he's never been any good at that either. So
I don't want to make you feel old, Tom, but he actually made his debut in 2002. By the way, I was only 12.
come off the bench for was it against Dunfermline?
Forfar, I think it was.
All right.
Yeah. 2002, and yeah, we're in 2022, and he's still saving two penalties in a row in the Champions League. Incredible.
Grief.
But Scott, 10 men, as Dave said, that was it. It was an uphill struggle. And then I think we've seen the clearest message yet about this team lineup. Who was it? Ryan Jack came off and Leon King came on. Because obviously Gio still wanted to go with the three at the back. And Ben Davis is on the bench.
Yeah. I don't know again whether it's just down to sheer fitness.
On the bench, that would be my question.
But it's not as if we've got a squad in abundance where we can sit and go like that. We'll put him in the bench because he's 100% fit and we'll leave out guys that are 70-80% fit. I think he's there in case we have a catastrophe and we get three centre-halves or two centre-halves injured. If he's no fit, or King's fitter than him. And again, I think it was down to the legs. I was in the, like Dave said there, when it went to 10 men, it was going to be an uphill battle. Personally, I think it was going to be an uphill battle after about 60, 65 minutes. I think we played like Celtic last night. We pressed. We never got a goal. And when it hit a certain time in the game, I was sitting on the legs are going to go. When that red card came out, I was just like, fuck me, we have got an uphill battle now. Because you cannot maintain, against that quality opposition, you cannot maintain that for 90 minutes.
No. And it took another penalty. The Napoli players outside the box, he rattles the ball in and it comes off the hand of Borna Barisic. And to be honest, there can be no complaints with this. I think if somebody's going to be very critical of the ref and try to be very defensive for Barisic, they could say that the ball was very close to him. But when you actually look at it, Barisic does make his body bigger. The ball was going to go on target if it doesn't hit his hand.
He was standing like fucking John Travolta on Saturday Night Fever, man. It's a fucking stonewaller.
Yeah, it's a stonewaller all day long. And this time they convert it. McGregor almost gets there. He almost gets a hand to it, but it's 1-0. And this is harsh to say this, but we're done at this point. We've got nothing in the tank. We are running on empty. A few subs are made. Matondo comes on, Tillman comes on, Kamara comes on, Cholak comes on. And I think it's fair to say, I'll hand it over to kind of Scott and Dave at this point. But Kamara coming on kind of killed the game for us. You know, I think he was at fault for both the second and the third. But by that point, guys, Dave, will come to you first. Napoli are just picking us off now, aren't they?
That's just exactly what happened. They just picked us off. It was their quality. The second goal, the guys, they're just popping it around for fun, and they pop it through the middle and open us up. That could have happened in the first 10 minutes. Could have happened in the last 10. We've done well to keep it to 1-0 with a penalty, and a completely non-contentious penalty, by the way. That is a stonewaller. And then you've got that wee, they've got that wee edge of quality. You just sometimes have to hold your horns up and say, aye, right, okay, fair enough. But we did get picked off. The subs broke the rhythm up. I think he was more, his subs were attacking, so he did seem to keep going for it, and credit to him for that. I thought, good attitude, might as well keep going here. And you never know. You just never know if he throw bodies at Tillman on the park, whatever. But Kamara, who I'm a big fan of and usually praise him, was slow and ponderous, just broke the rhythm up. And I think that many subs does that to a team sometimes, just breaks the rhythm. They can't gel right, and it just falls apart, and it did. And he gets his pocket picked for the last one, and two fairly straightforward finishes. But I don't think the score line is at all fair on us, to be honest. 1-0, 2-1 would have been a fairer reflection of the night's events.
Yeah, much like Dave said, I think Gio just looked at it and went, like, you know what, a 1-0 loss is as bad as a 2-0 loss is as bad as a 1-0 loss or a 3-0 whatever. So he fucking went for it. it's not as if we're going to rely on fucking goal difference to get through this group after the first week. So he went for it. He tried to get slightly attacking minded with the subs, albeit we were a man down. And that quality just picked us off. They showed their class. Two, like you said, relatively straightforward goals. Again, no keeper's really saving them. You're making yourself big, and it was the defence that got picked apart. Kamara, for the first one, he got bullied, and for the second one, he got his pocket picked. Now, for me, I shouted, see when we went down to 10 men, and before we continue in with the fucking loving with Morelos, I was calling for him to get fucking hooked, because he'd done the exact same thing as he did at Hibs.
Yep.
Done something completely fucking needless when we've got the Spanish fucking Willie Collum ref in the game, doing the absolute needless bookings for everything, and he decides to take a fucking more than a handful of a boy's jersey. I was surprised he wasn't off for it.
See, at half time.
That said, after we brought Kamara on, we might as well have just went down to fucking 9 men, because Kamara was worse than a man down last night. Absolute abysmal. His concentration was just non-existent. I was infuriated with him last night. I thought he was awful.
He's not kicked on at all this season. Barring what the one game in Europe, he's just, I don't know if it's, he was expecting a move. I don't know if, you know, there's maybe something in the background to say you can have a move, and it's not came off for him, so he's sort of taking a bit of a strop. But yeah, he's not been at the races.
Yeah, he's not been. And that's another problem for us. Look, it was a gutsy performance. It was a much needed performance. It shows how low we've been as a support, that we're going to accept that performance has been acceptable despite it being 3-0. I agree entirely that it was very harsh on us, but that's what happens in Champions League level football. It can be harsh because of the quality of the opposition. So look, I don't think this adds to the pressure in Gio. I want to talk about Gio. We'll just do that now before we come on to individual performances and we come on to referees' performances. Let's talk some Gio. We spoke about a possible message he sent to the board there. I think we've discussed that. I want to talk about his setup, his tactics, and the question that I think has been dominating everyone's mind, or the vast majority of Rangers fans' minds in the last 2 weeks anyway, is, are these players still playing for Giovanni Van Bronckhorst? And for me, tactically, I thought he was spot on last night. Again, showed his flexibility, something that we wouldn't have seen under the previous manager. Not that I'm having a go at Steven Gerrard, but I'm just saying that I think we've got a manager who's possibly a level above the previous manager when it comes to European football, and I think that showed last night with the way he set up and what he managed to get out of the players. Because we have to have a certain amount of versatility to go from system to system to system. Now, Gio done it in the Europa run. It was very successful for us. But when you're in the Champions League, it's a whole different level. And for 60 minutes, we gave more than a good account of ourselves. Without that red card, anything could have happened. I tend to agree with Scott in terms of, I think it still would have been too much anyway, purely because of the legs. But we'll never know. So we could say that anyway, that after 60 minutes, if it's 11v11, anything could have happened. So tactically, I thought he was spot on, and I have to say, you do not get physical performances, never mind technically, but physical performances in terms of running yourself into the ground, hassling your men, pressing and pressing and pressing, like Scott said. You don't get that if you're not on side with the manager. Dave, I'll come to you first, because obviously you've questioned this more often than not. Did that put that question to bed for another couple of weeks for you at least?
I don't think it does definitively, because as I said the other night, there could be a sneaking suspicion that we're turning into a bit of an Aberdeen where Ibrox under the lights, it's easy to get yourself up for that and everybody can get themselves up for these big games and the manager doesn't really do much. I put in the group chat last night when you said this that PSG 2001 was the same. Advocat was clearly failing in every respect and we still pulled out a magnificent result and the season continued to crumble thereafter. So for me, it's not definitive, but I certainly agree up to a point that seeing the team fight, dig, make runs, battle, it's something to take heart from. We all wanted the performance. So, the key thing now is that it's repeated on Saturday. He's got a free pass again after it. And I think it's the first game back, Tynecastle.
I think so. I should know this.
It must be a domestic game. We wouldn't come back into a Champions League game, surely. So he's got Tynecastle and then...
Yeah, it's Hearts.
Yeah.
So he's got Tynecastle and Anfield thereafter.
Yes.
Okay. So I think it gets away. Last night, no pressure. I agree with that. Saturday, it's up to him to make sure it doesn't add to the pressure. And then two very difficult games that are going to tell us a lot about where we are as a team. Not as a club or as a squad, but just where this team is and where the manager stands when we come back.
Yeah. Scott, tactically, how did you see it last night?
I understand what you were saying earlier on. Personally, I don't think he shifted much for his normal 4-3-3, albeit that Lundstrom sat a bit deeper. When you look at the majority of the lines, especially when we played in transition, it was 4-3 in the middle and maybe Kent dropping slightly deeper, but it was a centre-back partnership with Lundstrom. I thought Lundstrom put a great shift in last night, covering that sort of space between the lines, but I don't think tactically, I'm not going to say I was enthralled by it. I don't think he's changed anything. Again, I think that's something that's a sort of red flag for me, is the managers that are insistent that they'll play their tactics either way and teams need to adapt to us. And you tinker with things, you set up to exploit weaknesses in different teams. And listen, he's got more management credentials than me, obviously, but for me, the managers that make the changes and look to exploit things and or weaknesses in other teams' games or to contain what their strengths are, those are the managers that tend to be the most successful. So tactically for me last night was nothing new. However, the work rate that we got for the players certainly suggests he's no loss to dressing room. And I think it's a question for the players. Like Conor Goldson said, there was a lot of soul searching, a lot of big questions that they had to look in the mirror and ask themselves. And they responded with that, and albeit pumped in the night again. But yeah, pumped in the scoreline, no pumped in the field. So yeah. I think they can take a bit of heart from that. But again, we're no Rangers fans. I'm going to be sitting here and be happy coming off the back of three games, 11 goals and none scored. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
got to draw a balance from that. And I'm with Dave. I can't say I'm enthralled or I'm looking forward or excited about Saturday.
Yeah, it's for me, it's up to the players to lift us, which they did do last night to a certain extent. And it's up to them to lift us. We are at a performance right from the get-go on Saturday, which we will come to. But Tom, we'll start talking about some individual performances. We spoke a bit about this offline. That was really, really difficult for me to say that. I don't know why. For me, this is just for me, Tom. I want to hear what you think. But for me, Morelos, we are starting to get him back to the old Morelos. You know, running about daft, coming up to the halfway. And by the way, see when I say that running about daft, that seems very flippant, actually. His running is very crucial. It's just, you know, sometimes for me, he runs into areas that he probably doesn't need to run into. But again, that's just Morelos. We don't have the full package with Alfredo Morelos. You're going to have that wee bit of football and immaturity. But on the whole, I thought His pressing was fantastic. His physical prowess was there. He's kind of him just being in certain positions was giving Napoli something to think about. He looked sharp. He could look sharper, of course. But for me, the best thing about the Morelos that we seen last night was he looks good. He doesn't look overweight now. He's always going to have that kind of shape to him, but for me, he looks as good as he's looked in a long while. And all we need now is for the goals to start coming in. So for me, I thought Morelos was absolutely fantastic. I'm so glad he's back. As I said, Colak has rammed my words down my throat many times, but I don't expect to see Colak feature as much in the next couple of months now. I think he's going to be that kind of super sub role. And that is harsh as that might seem, if that is the case, that means Morelos is fit and firing, and that's what we need. I also want to point out Arfield. I thought Arfield, look, we know what we get with wee Scott Arfield. Technically, he's not going to be the best football player to ever play for Rangers Football Club, but I thought he's running all night, snapping into challenges. His organisation, I seen that as well last night. There was an instant where Morelos get booked, which we've all come to when we talk about the ref, but he get booked when he should never have been booked, and Morelos just did not shut up. He was talking himself into a red card. James Tavernier's standing right next to him, the captain, and walks away, and Scott Arfield runs and he actually grabs him by the collar and pushes him away. And, you know, that's the kind of leadership we needed on the nights like that. And I thought Arfield reminded us all of just how much a part he's got to play, because he's had a lot of criticism unjustified for me. So my two standouts from last night was Morelos and Arfield. Tom, what about yourself? Do you agree with them, or have you any others that you want to mention?
Yeah, I would agree with you, to be honest. Alfie, I think being dropped and, you know, getting that public rock up his arse from Gio has worked wonders. He's not back at the level that we know he's capable of, but I think he's getting there. You know, yeah. As you said, he's doing what we expect of him, but he's not quite at the level. But I think that'll come with games, and yeah, I think would be crazy not to start him, especially on Saturday. Okay, yeah, Scotty Arfield. You know what you, as I said, you know what you get with him. He's not the most technically gifted, but he'll roll his sleeves up and fight for you. So yeah, it was one of those games we needed something like that last night.
Dave, what about you?
I'd agree with both of them. If you had a team of Scott Arfields, you would win more games than you lost, regardless of your opposition. I love everything about the guy. I love his intelligence, his runs, his desire, his heart. Another great performance. It's kind of, obviously he's in a sort of twilight years of his career, or his time at Ibrox, certainly with a 1-year deal, but replacing him is going to be tough. Alfredo back, great, says jersey, same as McGregor-McLaughlin debate, it's a non-contest. The other guy I thought played well, he did have a couple of iffy moments, as is his wont, but I thought Borna, again, third game in a row, acquitted himself well, and maybe he's just keeping Yilmaz out of the team.
Well, we kind of spoke about this offline, but what I said to Eddie last night was when the ball came to Borna just outside the box, and he takes a touch and he's looking up and he's obviously ready to cross it, and then you've got 50,000 people shouting man on and he still doesn't heal, and the boy robs him, picks his pocket and gets it. I said, my exact words to Eddie were, I can't wait to see his recovery in November. You know what I mean? Because you just expected his head to go down. I will be fair to him, his head didn't go down after, well, I think it did for about a couple of minutes, and then he started to play his way back into the game. He never done his usual kind of playing the ball back and trying to hide it. He still showed a bit. My worry with Borna is, I agree with you, I think the Yilmaz situation is purely down to Borna's got the jersey and he's performing decently. I just don't think anymore that a successful Rangers team can have Borna Barisic as the first choice left back. And if Yilmaz doesn't make a fight for that jersey over the next couple of weeks, I'm worried big time. Big time.
Don't me. I've said before, I don't think Borna was the problem position. He is one of these guys who I do think several times it's happened his race has been run at Ibrox. He's just, he came to a natural conclusion. The Old Firm game last year where he said his goodbyes, the summer. He's always been linked to a reasonably good move because he's got good technical attributes and he plays his international football for a good country. Again, I don't want to labour this point. It's just a sign of how badly the squad's been managed. He hasn't been moved on. Yeah. And we now have to see his sort of in the raw foibles develop as his motivation levels or whatever diminishes. He could have left and been well thought of after that season, and it hasn't been moved on, so that's on the board. But on the whole, Bournemouth, generally speaking, has more good periods, not good games, but he's more good periods where he's a reasonably solid citizen in a season than he has bad. But bad, his bad periods are...
Aye, absolutely howling. But to my point on Yilmaz, right, I know what we're like as a fan base, putting unnecessary pressure on new signings who are young, but like, this guy's £5 million. If he can't make a right fight for this jersey over the next couple of months, are you going to be worried? Because, as I said, I think I'll be in the category of, oh shit, man, this is a huge outlay for a player who just, for whatever reason, can't dislodge a guy who will be hot and cold.
Exactly, 100%. Scott said at the top of the show, he has been backed, and financially, yes, I couldn't make that argument stand up that we haven't spent money, because we have, but it shows how badly it's been spent. If Yilmaz cannot come in, if we were spending £5 million or whatever it was, we should have bought an immediate first team contributor at the level of Kent or Morelos.
Yeah.
If we'd paid £5 million for Lawrence, he would go, right, okay, he needs to up his game a wee bit, but I can see what's coming. We need to put that money into the starting 11, not put it on the bench.
Yeah. Scott, I'll come to you with individual performances as well, but just on the £5 million problem, which Dave says didn't exist at left back, do we... Maybe not in the short term, but in the long term, do we need to sink that sort of kind of money in the goalkeeping position?
Yeah, in the long term, even in January, I'd be looking to bolster the goalkeeping, but I think...
Scott would give John McLaughlin £5 million to go away, I think.
I think last... I'm just glad, like I said, at the very start of the season, Chris, when we were talking about the recruitment and that, I get a lot of stick for saying McGregor's our number one. Now, I never said that we shouldn't have invested in a goalkeeper, but what I said was that McLaughlin wasn't good enough, and that the legend himself went out there and proved that last night. Without McGregor on the park last night, that's 4-5 nothing again. Albeit at a penalty and then two goals where he was sold up the river. But and then it's the usual, you get there, but he doesn't come for crosses, but he can't stop a fucking shot, you know what I mean? So it's like, there's a big difference that comes to it, and for me, McGregor's head and shoulders above it. The amount of folk that were greeting about a couple of games last season where, oh, it was McGregor's fault. The nonsense argument that he cost us the season, when in turn it was games that we should have dead and buried and the team capitulated. Last night was another example of what he brings to the squad and what it is to have that experience and that ability at the back. And you solve that whole corners pish by putting a man in the post and attacking the fucking ball when it comes into your box. So we don't need him to come for corners if we defend him. Yeah. So for me, McGregor was the standout for me. Again, all credit to Scott Arfield. I thought he was outstanding. I can't say much more than what everybody else has said, other than he runs himself into the ground every time he's got the jersey on and he'll go until he can. Barisic, I think Yilmaz will shift him when Barisic hits his next trough, and I think that's the way I look at Borna Barisic's Rangers career, his peaks and troughs. I've never ever criticised his ability, but I criticise his temperament, and I think that when sometimes he's like you said last night, the man on situation, there's been a couple of occasions when he's maybe been slightly caught out or his awareness has let him down, but when he has a couple of stinkers, it affects his attitude and he doesn't go into tackles, he doesn't attack, he plays the safe pass back to the keeper every time, etc. So for me, Yilmaz will shift him when the time's right and when Borna hits his next trough. Morelos, I'm not getting too excited. I think this whole fit and fire in Morelos, oh, it's wonderful, oh, he's back. Look at the difference in the team last night. I'm like, Cholak would have performed better in the last two games if fucking the 10 jerseys around him had showed up and put that sort of shift in. So I think it was a collective effort and Morelos reaped the rewards for that, albeit he didn't put the ball in the back of the net. but I think we're being too harsh on Colak. I think they're very different types of strikers. One's more a complete forward, the other one's a target man. But at the same time, Colak's not let us down when given the service. So I would be disappointed to think if that's automatically the jersey straight back to Morelos. And his attitude again last night annoyed me. I don't care whether you want to call it passion or he was fired up. I know he was trying to G the crowd up. I know he was wanting to get it going. You're on a yellow with a card, happy ref, and you're pulling a jersey. Fucking wise up, son, man. Come on, you fuck.
Scott hates Alfredo Morelos. There's only that's the only conclusion I come here. It's an irrational hate. That's shocking, Scott. Absolutely shocking. No, listen, you're right. Let's just get into it, you know, the yellow card and then obviously his attitude towards that. Let's just grate into the referee. I obviously before the game, by the way, Scott, I missed this. I'm going to bring it up. You know, I totally missed this. It was Eddie that directed me to it. You said he was one of the best referees in the world, Scott.
He's literally rated as one of the top four refs in the world at the moment.
Yeah, no, listen, you're actually right. He is highly, highly rated. And that if he's one of the best in the world, there's a fucking problem with the refs on a European scale, never mind a Scottish scale, because he is, for me, now I spoke to Stevie Clifford. I actually had a thread on Twitter about this, who is a qualified referee. So for me, obviously, he's a qualified referee at a lower level, but he's still more qualified to have an opinion than I am. And, you know, fair enough, he probably did get the big decisions right on the night. It's how he got there, his attitude in terms of the smaller things. There was an incident about 15 minutes into the first half where the linesman gave us a throw-in because it literally was our throw-in and it happened literally right in front of the linesman. And the referee is at the centre half and he overrules the linesman. How can he have a better view than the linesman? I do not understand it. And that kind of set the tone. The Morelos booking where he goes in for a ball that's there to be won, he doesn't catch the goalkeeper, fair enough. It could have been a dangerous situation, but it wasn't. So you have to kind of go with the facts of the matter. And he gives him a yellow card, which effectively was his first offence. As I said, Morelos then starts yapping back at him, you know, talking himself into the book, and he has that wee kind of petulant moment in the second half. That's the Alfredo Morelos that we need to get work done on that. It's been 5 years now. I think we just need to accept that's who he is, albeit as frustrating as it is, and it might end up costing us again, but it's just who he is. I would love to be able to change it, but I don't think, you know, if he's not going to listen to Steven Gerrard and Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, he's not going to listen to anybody. We just have to put up with it, as shite as that might sound. But the actual booking itself put Morelos under so much pressure. You then had a couple of high feet from Rangers, which were punished. I actually thought that Lundstrom got booked for a high foot, but it turns out he was booked for dissent after a foul. And then the Napoli players were doing it back to us with high feet, and we weren't even getting the foul, never mind the booking towards them. There was two throw-ins from my side of the pitch where obviously I sat in the sandy jardin, which were clear foul shies. Now, if you can't identify a foul shy when you're at Champions League level referee, then I'm just totally perplexed there. And then that penalty shenanigans, he did get to the right decision for the retake, there's no doubt about it. It's how he got to the right decision. He did not have a clue. He went away and you could see him holding his ear for a good minute, 2 minutes, because he was desperate for the VAR to tell him what to do, when in actual fact he should have known, because I actually believe that the referee identified the encroachment straight away. I don't think that came from VAR. I think the referee actually identified that, and then he's thinking, right, what do I do here? Do I give it? Is it a bounce ball to Rangers? Is it a penalty? Is it a retake? And he didn't have a clue. Well, he should know the laws inside out. And then, as I said, it's a kind of irrelevant point, but I'm still really bitter about that decision he gave against Morelos against Dortmund. Well, again, there was some defence of that when I was speaking to Stevie Clifford. Well, actually, there was more than some defence. Stevie said he was absolutely spot on with it. It just wasn't, right? He did not go in front of the movement of Emre Can. Emre Can booked him because he got there before him, and then obviously it cost us a goal and ultimately a win on the night against Dortmund again. I just felt that he was very Willie Collum, like I think it's been said, I think Scott, you said it, in terms of that he wanted the attention on him, he wanted it to be all about him, and he heavily favoured Napoli, and now Dave's got his own theory as to why he heavily favoured Napoli. I don't quite buy into that, although as an Italian team, I don't think that it was in their pocket, but I just couldn't believe some of the decisions that was going against us last night. And let's be honest, I don't think he lost control of the match at any point, but my God, it was close. And the penalty itself, I know we kind of touched upon it. I'm still not convinced at all. I think it is a penalty. I have watched it back several times now. I think the penalty was conceded by John Lundstrom, because Sands goes for the ball. It does get a ball here on it. Which I get, in the current laws of the game, it doesn't actually matter if you win the ball or not, because if you take the man after it, it's still a penalty. But Simeone actually jumps over Sands' leg, which is trailing, and as he's jumping over, Lundstrom with two hands pushes him in the back, and then he lands on his face. And I think that's where the foul came from. And the yellow card should have then went to Lundstrom, who at that point in time wasn't booked, and instead it's went to Sands, who's been sent off, and the game has changed. So, Dave, I'll come to you last, because you're probably going to be the longest ranting here. Tom, performing thoughts on the performance of the ref?
Well, the old saying is, you know, a good referee you don't notice.
Well, that's true, aye.
And, you know, last night he was, I think he got the decision spot on. It was both penalties were Stonewall penalties. The one we didn't get to the end wasn't a penalty. I'd need to watch the first one again to see if it was Sands or Lundstrom, but he got the three big decisions right. But apart from that, he just, as you said, he was like a camera referee. What to be seen on the telly?
It was very quick to get the cards out for us, but it took quite a lot of build up offences from the Napoli players from to kind of get the card out for them. I remember one instance, Scott, where the Napoli player didn't want to take the throw in because one of their players was getting treatment, so he was obviously delaying the throw in so that he can get back on. Whereas it shouldn't have mattered, because that player shouldn't have been allowed back on the pitch until the throw in was taken. But the player delayed it that much, he eventually did book him, and then the player came back on before he took the throw in. That's simple shit when you're at this level.
Yeah, I don't think he came back on the park before Politano took the throw in. He got waved on after the ball was played, but. There was a few, like I said, it was maddeningly inconsistent. Whether or not the Morelos one, you've seen it, the booking for that, whether the ref thinks there's intent or whatever, that's 50-50. A bad ref or a good ref would maybe still sometimes give that one. The most infuriating one for me, I think, was the John Lundstrom one, in which the one went out, I think it was over towards you in the Govan stand, where he won the ball. Yeah. And he was easy a yard off the player's foot, but the boy jumps up in the air, 2 feet tucked back, and the big screaming ah hits the deck, and he gets a booking out. Now, I know Lundstrom, I wasn't too sure if Lundstrom was getting the booking afterwards for giving him mouth, but at the same time, I don't think it was that. I think the yellow card was out before Lundstrom started giving him any aggro back for it, but that was a ludicrous decision. And like you said, it was so inconsistent. You're going to get card half pay refs, and you're going to get refs that want the centre of the attention and whatever. It's very few and far between the ECRF that is quiet in a game nowadays. However, if it was the same for both teams, then fair enough. There was a couple of the challenges that we made in the game that if Napoli had done similar, if not worse, and there was no bookings dished out. And again, it goes back to my fury of Morelos acting the goat. And Paul, honestly, the most blatant jersey pull right next to the linesman of all places to fucking do it. And I instantly thought he was off. So it surprised me by no giving that one. So maybe we got away with one there. But no, I thought the ref did have a shocker of a performance.
See on the Morelos one with a possible second booking. Again, this might just because I'm fully emotional, 24 hours after the match, I'm still angry at the referee's performance, so I might be looking too much into it, but do you think the referee knew he made an ass of the first booking, so he's thought to himself, right, I'll let him away with this?
He might have very well done that the first one was a bit soft, thought the first one was a bit soft, but again, it goes back to the laws of refereeing. It doesn't matter if something's a bad tackle, it doesn't matter if it happens in the first minute of the game or the last minute of the game, you've got to stand by your judgment, and you've got to stand by the rules of the game.
That's fair.
And I do think that it was just extremely inconsistent. And again, going back to it, again, like I said, I'm trying to get, there's a part for the actual love in about how everybody knows and how much I love Morelos as well and how much he brings to the team and what he does. There's not one person that can't say to me, he could have cost us fucking dearly again last night, albeit we didn't get the 3 points. He could have caused us another fucking hiding last night. I mean, he is one of the reasons why we're 5 points behind in the league right now, without a shadow of a doubt. Now, last season, it was quite easy to point the blame and blame McGregor for dropping a ball against Ross County. Yet, Morelos this season gets sent off against 10 men against Hibs, and he's doing it again. I know what you're saying about what he brings to the team and what he's not. He hasn't learned under Gerrard, he hasn't learned under Gio. But there has to come a point when you just go, is it going to be worth it, the amount that he's going to cost us? Does he rescue us enough throughout the rest of it to warrant getting the suspension every so often and costing us 2 points, 3 points, whatever?
Yeah, no, it's a fair argument. It's a fair argument. Dave, your thoughts on the ref? This should be good.
Absolutely abysmal. The worst that I've ever seen at Ibrox, I think. And certainly the most... I don't want to get any sort of daft podcast territory, but it looked to me as if, and it's a cliche for a reason, that referees favour the big teams in Europe. It looked to me very clearly that there was a momentum shift that was brought about by the ref. The throw-in you mentioned, Morelos is booking, he actually kind of plants his feet and gets shoved over the guy and gets booked inexplicably. Lahoz has to run sort of 15, 20 yards to do it instead of calling him, just letting it go. The second booking, I thought he was off. Scott, I agree, I thought he's out here. But see, at halftime, you know Morelos loves it when he finds a wee buddy he can speak Spanish to. Him and the ref came out almost arm in arm at halftime. Right? They came out with their arms around each other and then they were continuing to natter after kickoff and kind of chat with each other. So I don't know if they've maybe...
Did they shake the referee's hand when he gets subbed? I'm sure
did he... That backs that up then, because he came out the tunnel not far from where I sit and I'm like, he's looking at the two of them to the boys' room, he's nattering away. You know, he likes to find a wee pal. So the ref's obviously... softened, because you see the jersey getting tugged clear as day and you're thinking, oh, that's all the reason this ref needs. It just looked to me that, and my feeling at the time, and I tried to get used to the reaction pod last night, and it'd have been worse then, was the referee, UEFA Mafia. This happens to Atletico Madrid, my second team as well. We play Bayern, play Juventus, play Real Barca in Europe. The lesser team gets nothing, and this just seems more pronounced at this level that the referee favoured Napoli, and that was my opinion last night.
Would you not argue Atletico are probably better than Bayer Leverkusen, mind you?
I don't. What happened the other night? Well, Atletico got a penalty denied the other night.
Penalty denied, aye, but you can't say he was favouring the big team in that tie, really, could you?
No, I don't know what was going on there, but
who was the home team?
Leverkusen.
Maybe that was something in that. I
don't know. But it looked to me, my impression at the time was this is quite obviously the referee's bent and gave them absolutely everything. As you said, they were getting free kicks for things that we weren't. Just a momentum shift actually made me look forward to Kevin Clancy coming in Saturday.
Oh, God.
It was never that bad. Come on.
At least you know where you stand.
Just to clarify for our listeners, Dave was suggesting the ref being bent was corrupt and not any other.
I'm using it in a kind of old school 50s gangster sense rather than the kind of modern sort of so what pejorative you sense.
Dave, you try to say the referee fingered us last night?
No comment on that, but I watch a lot of Spanish football, and Lahoz is notorious for me, look at me, I love my big baldy, he'd been on the camera. He just loves it, man. Every
You're not
game
really
revolves
helping with the definition here.
Every game revolves around him. He's always got to take ages to make decisions. I actually thought, apart from the Alfredo decision, he was good against Dortmund. I thought he was. We actually spoke about this. There's a pod about this where I defended him, and you were slating him. And I thought, well, that might be the rules, as Stevie Clifford said. Well, if he says it is, but. I thought he was all right in the Dortmund game, apart from that one incident. And then last night was just a shit show of epic proportions, where they got absolutely every bit of Dubai.
I don't know if there's...
any of you guys here are probably better to discuss this than I am, but see in terms of the first penalty, see the fact that there's so many interpretations of that, that's fine, but I think everybody comes to the conclusion that at most 90% it was a penalty. So you would probably need to gear it as kind of, you know, as stupid as that actually sounds. I think there's still a wee bit of an argument there to suggest why it maybe wasn't a penalty. But the issue that I now have with that, having spoke to some people and reviewed it literally about 100 times, is I'm still not convinced that Sands was the guy who made the foul. So with every penalty and every goal, there's automatic VAR checks anyway. And I get that he needs to kind of be prompted to go to that monitor. Why is the VAR not said, look, number four, Lundstrom, he's actually pushed him in the back with two hands. So can you go and have a look at that just to make sure you booked the right person? It didn't go at all. It didn't even, there was no, it was a case of I've gave that, I know I'm right, and that's it. And the consequences of it was so severe. It wasn't that, by the way, listen, I understand what I sound like here. I don't sound like a Rangers fan at all because I'm fucking moaning like fuck going on about a referee who's changed a game and not in our favour. I get that, but it's just so frustrating that if this happened in Scotland, we wouldn't even be speaking about this for any more than 2 minutes, because this is what happens in Scotland, incompetence and bullshit and baffling decisions. But we're at the highest level of club football that there can be, and we've just seen a shit show of a performance. Is it genuinely just a case of he didn't go and check the monitor because he wasn't told? Or is there an element of the referee having some flexibility where he can actually say to VAR, look, I know I've made the right decision, but I don't know if I've made the right decision with the red card. Can I go and check that? Has he got the reign to actually go over and check it without VAR authorising it? Denny's no.
I've no idea, but it did strike me as odd that there was so many contentious decisions that he didn't go. Mm. I think referees have started to use it as a bit of a safety net and just go over for the majority of things. And then the one time he did go, he overruled himself in favour of Napoli. So,
by the way, I totally missed that. I was at the ground at that point.
Big admission to making a Rangers podcast.
Not really, mate. I'm in the govern reel. That we're the loyalist of Subway Law. It was
I totally missed that.
Really?
Aye.
I just don't see it, Scott. I just don't see it. I think he touches the ball and Simeone jumps over his trailing leg. I just don't see where any contact is made at all. Look, watch. Have you got it in front of you right now?
Yes.
Hey, watch it right now. Don't even look at Sands. Look at Lundstrom. This is cutting edge podcasting.
Andrea is saying that video in an audio medium is actually quite tricky.
Yeah, I bet. Be descriptive, Scott. So you watched Lundstrom there. What do you think?
I'm just watching it back just now.
This is good. It's like sort of soccer Saturday.
The foot had already hit face.
Never mind, Sands. Just watch Lundstrom.
I know, but he's already on his way down before Lundstrom even puts his hand out.
He's two hands on him before Sands comes anywhere near him.
Nah, he's not. His hands don't go on him. He's got one hand on at the side of him, and his second hand doesn't come over to the guy's already on his way down.
Oh well, Dave. Napoli have paid off Scott. It's the only conclusion they can make. Anyway, Kevin Clancy, Saturday, Dundee United. How about that for a segue?
There you go. That's it.
Right. Rangers' current run of form is 3 defeats in the last 3 games, 11 conceded, none scored, 4-0 against Celtic, 4-0 against Ajax, 3-0 against Napoli, 2 Champions League games and an Old Firm game. So in terms of crisis, I think that word is probably overused at the moment, because there is severe mitigating circumstances for that. You can lose an Old Firm and you can lose 2 Champions League games, albeit the manner of the performances and the actual scorelines itself, that is certainly a cause for concern. But it's a very plausible thing to happen to Rangers and Celtic, by the way, because we could have beat Celtic and Celtic could have lost their next 2 Champions League games, but obviously that didn't happen. But I don't buy into crisis. However, what I will say is anything less than 3 points on Saturday
it's not looking good for Gio, and a crisis is certainly on the horizon. In fact, you know what, it will be a crisis, because just say we draw, Celtic win, that's 7 points. A defeat and Celtic win, that's 8 points. No, that's not right, is it? 6 points in any. So we just simply have to win. Gio needs to get a win. A performance is crucial as well, I think, but I think it becomes secondary. I think the result is more important than the performance, especially when we're talking about games in Scotland. However, on performance, Tom, I'll come to you first. We have to start. We just have to start like we mean to go on. We can't have this slow build-up bullshit and getting to half-time, nothing each, and then getting the first goal in the first 10 minutes of the second half and then taking it for air and then hanging on for 10 minutes because it's still 1-0. This is a Dundee United team, Tom, who have conceded goals like fucking, like they're going out of fashion, you know, 9-0 against Celtic. Is it 6 or 7-0 against Altmar, I can't remember. They got a positive result under the caretaker last weekend, but it was a draw. They are low in confidence. They're not a great team. Yet here I am, Tom, fully expecting it to give us a game. Why is that?
Because like most of the team in Scotland, when they play us, they turn into Pep Guardiola's Barcelona.
But do you think that actually matters, though? Because at the end of the day, they can have a performance that is out with their normal capabilities. I get that. They raise their performance for a certain team. I totally understand that, right? But it still shouldn't matter when we've got literally 11 better players than them. And, you know, we've always, since Gerrard's came in the door, we've always struggled with it. The only teams that we really kind of struggled, like under Walter, for example, the only teams we really kind of struggled with this kind of risen performance level was always predominantly Aberdeen. That was the one team that we always found tricky for some reason. But any other team that tried to raise their performance against us, we just swatted away. And yet this group of team, this group of players in this particular team have always had an issue with that. And can you kind of shine any light on why do you think that is?
Because we give other teams too much respect.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I think you've just once you've actually got it spot on.
I'm loath to, you know, compare it to the other team over the city, but and I think it was a line you used. They go into a game going, how many today?
Yeah,
we go.
Thanks for that.
Dundee United, Ibrox. This could be, you know, this could be a tough one. You know, they'll be up for it. Instead of just going, no, bollocks, we're Dundee United. We'll blow them away. We're Rangers. And they just don't have that mindset, and I don't know why.
Scott, is it just as simple as that, just Dundee attitude?
Yeah, yes and no. I think if we do not win on Saturday, then serious questions have to be all asked to the management and the players. We've said it before, tactically, this slow build-up, keeping possession, whatever, we've not get the. It doesn't matter who we play. We could be playing Partick Thistle. We could be playing fucking Beath Juniors. There's not one day that I'll sit out there and go, we're definitely keeping a clean. There's not one day that I think that we're going to just go and keep a clean sheet, because I always feel that our concentration at the back is poor. Our positioning defensively, especially when teams hit us in the break, is abysmal. And we never seem to attack with any sort of pace. Now, this Dundee United team only wear their football shorts to keep their ankles warm. They've got bent over countless times this season. They've got beat 7-0 off Alkmaar, 4-1 off Hearts, 3-0 off St Mirren, 9-0 off Celtic. And, you know, for some reason, they're going to come and they're going to throw everything into this. It wouldn't surprise me if it went one each. Right, this team scored 5 goals in all competitions this season. Absolute embarrassment to a football club and a shambles. But if we don't go out there and we don't relentlessly press, play quick through balls to feet, and actually penetrate this defence. I've said it a million times, Celtic run at teams for 60 minutes, right? But in Scotland, that's good enough to get the result. You run at teams, you hit the byline, and you cut it back into the box where there's a couple of boys waiting, instead of pinging these stupid deep crosses into Fermers who love nothing more than to just heed a ball away. So if we do not win on Saturday, I think I'll be joining Dave in the camp Gio out.
Dave?
Well, there's plenty of space in this camp. We're recruiting every day, so don't worry about that.
I was going to say join Camp Dave, but I was just like, oh.
For me, right, the general point you made there, Chris, there's two kind of related but distinct things for me. And I think one, we had a few years away from the top division and relatively straightforward games. They're not always pleasant and they weren't always straightforward, but we won probably 80% of matches in that period fairly comfortably, and it was all one-way traffic. That time out of the top division, teams, the low block seemed, in my view, correct me if you guys think differently, but in my view, the low block was never really a thing when we were in the top division. Then we came back and suddenly it was the thing that the poorer teams were doing. The organisation, deep lying, tucking in two lines, centre-halves coming in, full-backs playing the centre-halves. I don't think it was that tactically sophisticated in 2010, 11, 12. And it is now. And every manager at that level just drills their team. Martindale, Tam Courts, Robbie Nielsen, to a lesser extent, they just drill this really deep thing, right? And in tandem with that, 4-3-3 possession-based attacking became a thing. So we adopted that. Gerard ran it. The theoretically unstoppable force of our attack met the very immovable object to these defences, and we struggled to break it down. So I think that's part of it, and not having the quality to do it is part of it. But the other thing that for me comes into it probably more is relative effort. To really go at teams and win games, you need to, you know yourself, we've all played football. You know yourself, some days you'll be up for it, you'll tackle, you'll get your shoulder in, you'll get in front, you'll sprint, you'll break your neck, you'll track runs, you'll make runs, you'll drop your shoulder to throw a run away. You do all that and you'll more often than not win. Teams come to Ibrox and do all that, they do all the extras. They do their 100% and then add the wee bits on top. If Rangers don't, then we have problems, and that has been the problem. Celtic and Ajax, shirking the extra run, shirking tracking the runner. And in football, is a sport where you can hide in plain sight. You can go through the motions and actually look all right, and nobody would criticise you because, well, I actually done the basics and he was just unfortunate. Possibly Kamara last night being an example of just plodding about, not doing his extras. So teams come, they do their extras. There'll be a few in Dundee United squad who will go above and beyond for them, and that's fine, that's a mark for them. Maybe don't do it in other games. So we need to do that as a team. And it's only by doing that that you get the chance to show your quality and do the quick one-touch passing and get the goals. So for me, you've got the low block and the possession-based football coming against each other, but relative effort within that's more important. And this team, we have to go out flying, not just in terms of passing it about, pinging it about lovely and moving it about, passing around the back, but breaking your neck, sprinting into space, dropping in, doing the extra 5-10. Doesn't have to be a lot. Just making a run, making a pass, making a bit of space for somebody else. We have to do that. And if we do that, keep doing it, the season should start to pick up. But if we don't, we are fucked.
Honestly, I thought we were getting another rendition of Michael Sheen there with the whole kind of... Have you seen that? Michael Sheen getting the...
That was class, aye.
I thought a wee bit of kind of battle music in the back there, Dave, man. I want to go to battle. look, there's no point asking for predictions because I think we kind of gave our predictions within our kind of answers there, where we know what we want, we know what we're going to expect, and we know what we need to do to overcome what's going to happen. And if Rangers do have the right attitude on the day, then it should be 3 points. But I think Scott said it, like, it wouldn't surprise us if it's a one each, if we see what we've seen all season when it comes to playing these teams. Tom said it, too much respect to people who are not due it. You know what I mean? How can we give one iota of respect to a team who get beat 9-0? Doesn't it matter if it's Celtic? Doesn't it matter if it was St Mirren that done it? You can't respect teams like that, because that performance itself, 4 or 5 of the goals is because they chucked it. How can you respect fellow professionals like that? So if we show them any respect on Saturday, we're already a goal down for me. We just need to go there and treat them for what they are, which is a shit team for a shit city. So that's it. I will ask one question, though, that kind of came into my head when Scott was getting his... kind of character assassination of Morelos. Sorry, Scott. Cholak, Scott, I'll come to you first. Is there a way we can get him and Morelos on the pitch at the same time from the starting 11?
Change tactics, aye, but...
let's just say, how do you do it, though?
You would need to play a 4-4-2, big man, little man, or you would need to drift Morelos out where he's wasted.
See, I think that's...
Either that or you play Morelos as a 10.
I think that's the answer. I honestly think Morelos out on the right could work. I genuinely think that could work. Am I just mental?
I don't think Alfredo would agree with you there. He does run the channels well in Europe. He always pops up on the right-hand side in Europe and bounces the centre-half and defender a bit. I'm not sure he'd be too keen in doing it as a kind of permanent vacation, right enough.
For me, Tom, Morelos and Colak starting against a team like Dundee United seems like the ideal opportunity to, no, maybe no experiment, but to actually go for the throat. Gio's not going to do it, is he?
No, and ordinarily I would agree with you, but going into a game, we've just conceded 11 goals in the last three games without reply.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday to me isn't the time for experimenting. We need a win.
Yeah, and I think the starting 11 will tell us a lot of what Gio's actually thinking this Saturday, because if it's a case of no new signings or maybe one new signing starting again, then considering we've got five of them fit enough to be on the bench, Davis, Yilmaz, Colak, Tillman, Matondo, they were on the bench at the against Napoli, so me and Scott kind of had a wee butt in our heads about this. I think if you're fit enough to be on the bench, you're fit enough to play the game. There's no use having a guy on the bench who isn't fit at all. So for me, if only one of the five start, it's a big message. If none of the five start again, well, I can see trouble on the horizon, and it wouldn't surprise me if it ends the career of one hierarchy at Rangers, whether that be Gio or Ross Wilson, but certainly not to end on a negative note, but certainly something needs to give, Dave, doesn't it?
Aye, we're fast approaching the crunch. As for me, we're there, the board clearly need to go, but any further pressure heaped on us with poor results, and it'll get ugly. Ibrox will get ugly, and there'll be quite open sort of outpourings of emotion and people getting angry at the team. And we've all been there. We all know what that's like, and we all know what we go through when that happens. So, aye, it's a must win.
Any summing up notes, Scott?
No, just if you can't beat Dundee United with the tactics you're using, it's either the players or the tactics. That's it, or whoever's imposing them. Yeah. Whether that leads to bigger conclusions, as in who recruited these players, who budgeted for these players, the explanation behind it, it'll all unravel, and there'll be hopefully no sharks thrown, but I'm not saying it's going to be a nice process. And to be honest with you, I do want it to work, or I do want something to either change, whether it's the dynamic or the tactics, because another one of these board reshuffles and then fucking share issues, and then a new manager in, and that, it sets you back a couple of seasons. Players will go for less than they're worth in the summer. We'll no sign on Kent and whatever in a new contract. They'll go for fuck all, and then we'll be playing with an even weaker hand than we've already got.
I love doing these podcasts. It's some laugh, isn't it?
Tell me I'm wrong, though.
It's
fucking miserable.
You're actually spot on. You're actually spot on. It's just, I think the most accurate thing that you said there, though, was there's literally no Rangers fan out there that doesn't want it to work. Because if it works, we're successful. So who's actually actively wanting this not to work? Who actually actively wants Ross Wilson to sign shite players or Giovanni Van Bronckhorst not to pick the best possible 11? Of course we want Wilson to sign good players. Of course we want Van Bronckhorst to pick the best team available and get his tactics spot on. There's nobody out there that actively wants anything other than that. It's the fact that a combination of the two have not quite been working. And as I said, I expect a winning Saturday. We need a winning Saturday. Anything other than a winning Saturday, and to Dave's point, things are going to get very ugly very quickly, because I don't think the league's lost yet, as much as Dave probably does think that, which is a fair assessment, Dave, because you look at form and individual performances and shit signings or a shit transfer window, sorry, you can easily come to that conclusion that the league's lost already, albeit it's 5 points and there's still a hell of a lot to go. But I have to say, you know, drop points at the weekend, man. I'm there with you, Dave, because it just cannot happen. And it will, as much as we're talking here that we know what we're going to get for Dundee United, a raised performance and all this kind of stuff, it will actually still come as a shock to me if we don't win on Saturday. And I can't be arsed with it. Everything that comes with that, the feeling of depression over the weekend because your team have let you down, and then seeing it all being consumed by social media talking, just everybody just so down, and then you've got the added impact of international break where you've got 2 weeks to fucking mull this over. Nah, just get the job done. Get the job done, get the few points, and then we'll take it for there when we go to Tynecastle, and then we'll have another discussion then about how we get the 3 points for Tynecastle. But listen, it's been a good discussion as always with you guys. Tom, thanks very much, mate.
No worries, thank you.
Dave, thank you, mate.
Cheers. That wee last bit you did there was like my inner voice. That's just constantly in my head.
Exactly.
That tirade.
And Scott, thanks very much, mate.
Always happy to bring a little sunshine into everyone's life.
Scott, obviously there's going to be a international break. So what can the listeners get from your wee project with Eddie and Andrew?
Well, actually, looking at the, I think it's Monday the 26th, we'll be looking to start season two of Whose Team Is It Anyway? And this is the greatest all-time English Premier League 11s. And we have got some big guests on that, so we'll be looking to put the teaser out later this week. And yeah, so stay tuned. If anybody enjoys that one, please like and subscribe and do all the usual jazz. But yep, it's part of the T40 podcasts.
You going to give us a wee tease of any of your guests, or is that to be revealed?
Well, let's just say we've got some big Premiership podcasts involved right away.
Oh, I like it. Look forward to listening. And, of course, a huge thank you to producer Andrew, who has sat and ate his dinner during this. I'm sure you enjoyed your dinner listening to us, Andrew.
It was delicious, yeah. Like I said in the pre-pod agenda, Dundee United still don't have a fucking manager at this point, so surely we can beat them, right?
Well, I kind of pride myself in the research that I do, right? But I kind of be asked research on Dundee United, but I also pride myself in having that kind of basic, decent level of knowledge on the Scottish game. I literally could not tell you who their caretaker manager is. I do not know. And we're getting into a game against them. I'm going to go on another rant. I'm going to calm myself down.
I think the worrying thing is, by the looks of it, it looks as if they've had, I don't know if there's such a thing as a name manager bounce, but since they sacked him, they've no lost a fucking game. They won 2-1 away to Livy and drew 0-0 away to Motherwell. The Hibs game was obviously postponed. Yeah. So, aye.
Right, okay. A cheery note to end on, but thanks to the listeners for listening to us. Join us next week. We will discuss the Dundee United game, and then we will be going on a short break for the international break. But as Scott says, Whose Team Is It Anyway? We'll get you through that break. And join us then. Thank you.
You went dogging.
Bet pod out of context.